and welcome back to Wrong Opinions Only with your hosts Justin and Kayla. Unfortunately, no Swarly this week, but we are getting into an episode that we've been talking about for a little while, and we are finally making it happen, Kayla, because we can be kind of picky folks, especially when we're watching movies.
We can be particularly picky, and I can't wait to get into that. But first, Justin, I want to bring up something that I didn't run by you first.
You know how I love when you just run things by me without preparing me first. So please, please continue.
It's kind of the fun I get, the kick I get out of the day. Taylor Swift recently announced that she's going to have another new album this year, April 19th, happens to be my birthday, and it has a literary reference, as is the Taylor Way, the Tortured Poets Department. How excited are you for this album?
I mean, I'm always excited for some T-Swift albums, so obviously, I will be diving in as soon as that is released. I'll be listening to the preparation podcast for it. Nobody knew it was coming because she is her own economy at this point, so she can do whatever she wants. She can just announce it at the Grammys after she sets records and wins her fourth album of the year. No big deal. And people, you know, I'm sick of people bashing her for shit nowadays. They're upset that, oh, she won the album of the year and didn't do something or didn't say the right thing. Shut up. All right. This person is hounded by paparazzi and people and everybody all hours of every day. She has thought out every little thing she does. And if you didn't see it on screen, it's probably because she handled it off screen when the cameras weren't there. So just, I don't know why I went on that rant, but I've been getting sick of the Taylor Swift backlash lately.
No, I agree. Like, and I think some of the conversation that could have been had about Midnight's winning was differently than how, like, she's just being, like, literally scrutinized for every movement she did on the stage or not. This may be controversial, but I don't know that Midnight's was my album of the year, if I'm voting, just in terms of, like, her albums to come out.
I was surprised it won, honestly.
So it would not have been my pick, and I'll say that on the pod. It would have been, I would have had SOS as a, or Boys Genius, who got some awards. Their record I play constantly. But she won. She won, and she accepted the award, and that was that. So it's I think it's just – and then between this and the Super Bowl, I mean, Godspeed to her. Good luck. Wild.
Did I tell you that when the wifey and I were on vacation in Florida, her uncle actually gets to vote on the Grammys? So he had his voter thing up, and he was going over some of the stuff with us. Like, hey, you know, I'm not too familiar with, like, the new artist of the year. Like, these albums, what are your thoughts? And honestly, I did not go a lot of Taylor's way on most of those. I kind of veered towards somebody else. And I did love the Midnight's album, but I don't think it was, like, her top. It'd probably be middle of the pack for me if I ranked them.
Yep. Yeah, no, absolutely. So, you know, it's so nice when we come together in agreement. And then we're going to go right into the premise of this podcast today, where we probably aren't going to agree with each other whatsoever. So it's nice get that right off the top. So this week, what we're going to do is I had been reviewing my Letterbox in the past year to kind of look at the movies and what I had rated. And I noticed that I had a bunch of films with ratings of threes, three and a half, and so very few fives. And obviously on this pod, it's pretty rare for us to rate a movie five VHS tapes. And so I was like, you know what? The people might want to know what you and I individually think of as a five VHS tapes film. Like, what movies are we giving the five max hands down? This is a five, and you know why it's a five for us. I think that might be interesting.
Yeah, it was a great idea on your part, Kayla, because that's something that I've been thinking about as well, because it's almost a bell curve, right? Where you very rarely rate movies one star and also five stars. So we land in that, for me personally, that 2.5 to 3.5 stars. That's majority of the movies I watch, because you're like, that was good. I'm not upset I watched it. It could have been better. And that's that 3.5, 3 range. And once you get to 4 to 5, it really needs to set itself apart either from my expectations or meet my lofty expectations, depending on the type of movie. And frankly, since we've started doing this pod, I've been getting more critical and my standards have been getting higher for these movies. So maybe something that I saw 5 years ago, 8 years ago, I would have been like, oh, that's a 5-star movie, no doubt. Now that I'm watching so many of them and I'm noticing smaller things, I'm less likely to rank those higher. And I think that also is a reason that I'm sometimes scared to rewatch old movies because I don't want them to be ruined on the nostalgia factor of, oh, I love this when it came out. Maybe I watched it at a specific time in my life where it hit a certain way and it just felt like this was the greatest movie of all time. But if you watch it 10 years later, you're like, oh, I'm not really in that same place. I'm not really relating to the characters or the story as much. So a lot of factors go into how you rate a movie.
Oh, yeah. And I feel like ever since we started this podcast, our critic hat, you know, is being worn all the time. And so I don't know if this was your experience, but I found some difficulties making my list because a lot of the movies I initially thought of were nostalgia movies for me, meaning like I'd watched this movie a million times as a kid. This is a 5-star. But if I'm wearing my critic hat, I'm like, ooh, I mean, really, the plot was kind of crazy and this person's performance was not great. And so I'm like, as you know, how I am today, would I actually rate that a 5, or is it the nostalgia kind of bleeding through of like when I watched it, who I watched it with? Did you run into any of that when you were making your list?
100%. That's I go through my initial list and I go, ooh, I rated that as a 5 on Letterboxd. And by the way, Letterboxd is just so clutch to just be able to track movies now, as before I'd be Googling and trying to write stuff down. And then when I'm looking at it, same thought, I go, I loved it when I saw it. I haven't rewatched it. And it was pretty sloppy in points. So I don't know. So I really had to look through and narrow it down to like 5 to 10 for me that I was like, I am very confident in the quality and my feelings on these movies. And then I whittled it down from there. But like to get to that list of like 5 to 10 took a little while.
Oh, yeah. And of course, as sure as we go down our list of we're going to do 5 movies each, we're just going to talk about when it came out, a little bit about the premise in case you haven't seen it. And then we're going to talk about why it's a 5 for us. And it may not be hard to believe, but obviously a 5 for you may not be a 5 for me and vice versa. So I am very interested in what's going to be on our list. Do you want to go ahead and start us off?
Before we jump into the list, can I just ask you, Kayla,
sure,
what types of, if you had to kind of categorize a few things that are more likely to be included in your 5-star movies, like for me, we talk about on the pod, I love to theorize. I like movies that make me think, which is why I'm into the murder mysteries. I like to come up with theories throughout the movies. I like child prodigy movies. Like if there's a brilliant 8-year-old who is like awesome at math, and I'm a sucker for those.
Baby Geniuses on your list? Is that a little preview?
No, but you know that movie Gifted almost made my list. That was 4.5 stars, but that's a 7-year-old genius mathematician girl, and I just love those movies. I don't know. They just hit me a certain way. I love seeing the little genius kids running around.
So what was your question? What movies tend to be 5s for me?
Well, not what movies, but what types of premises within movies stand out to you that you're more likely to rate higher? Like I said, the theorizing, the murder mysteries, the genius kids. Nostalgia has a good piece to it. If it brings me back to a time, that's sure, usually something I go towards as well.
I think it's not hard to guess when it comes to the movies I tend to like, but I do tend to prefer the movies that make me feel something that's not necessarily like crying, but it could just be like the humor of something or something I really related to. And that's because, you know, a lot of times it's through films that I'm kind of letting myself have those emotions and not necessarily like organically in my life. So I definitely feel like I tend to use movies to be like, oh, I'm sad about something, I'm going to cry through this movie.
Same, Kayla. Yeah. Same.
So that's why, like, a sad girl, you know, like I tend, yep, to be geared towards it because it's just like that's my outlet to like let these feelings out. But I get to say like, oh, it's because this character died and not, you know, because something sad happened in my life. So that is, you know, movies, you know, the gift of cinema and also therapy, y'all. So I definitely think that, and I don't tend to like the mysteries so much, but I do love like an insane premise, like a robbery or some sort of like gotta get out of here situation where it's like a fast paced kind of like an Ocean's 11 type, you know, where you gotta get the ball rolling.
I also, as we're talking this out, I love a, mm-hmm, great person movie. Like this person came, yeah, from nothing and they became amazing or they saved the day, or not as much like hero in terms of like Marvel superhero, but like they grew this business from nothing or something. From nothing or something. That didn't make any sense.
From you know nothing or something.
You know what I meant. But I also think, as I mentioned a little bit earlier, expectations play a little bit of a role. And I don't think they always should, but if you have really high expectations, even if you like something and you think it just missed, you're not going to give it a 5. Where if you're going into that with like mediocre expectations and it blows it out of the water, you're probably more likely to be like, oh shit, that was awesome. Way better than I thought. Let me rate it higher.
That's a great point, because I think I've mentioned this before, but when I had seen the movie Nope from Jordan Peele after seeing Us and Get Out, I was like, aliens, like, can't wait. This is going to be a scary horror. And it completely wasn't like that from my experience. And so I was disappointed leaving that theater, because I was like, this, if I had known it was more of like just a sci-fi commentary, I wouldn't have kind of gone into it with the expectation I was going to get scared or would have some scary moments. So I was disappointed. And I think I would have totally had a different outlook if I kind of knew what it was going to be going into it. So I agree. All right, let's go ahead and get to our list. Justin, do you want to go first?
Sure thing, Kayla. So let me start off with my first movie here. And as we said, it was tough to narrow it down. We want some diversity here. We don't want things we talk about on the pod all the time, but also to reach our audience and the wider audience that have seen these movies. So first on my list, I think hits that category, Good Will Hunting. I know this is one of your favorite movies of all time. 1997, Gus Van Sant. Everybody knows this, right? It's the apprehensive genius. One of my tropes that I fall for, I know. And Matt Damon is this genius kid without any education that isn't sure if he wants to really utilize that to be more in the world or to hang back with his crew, which is a great side cast of characters with Ben Affleck, Casey Affleck, Cole Hauser, Minnie Driver, Robin Williams plays the therapist. I mean, which Kayla just swoons over in that performance.
I love Minnie Driver so much. So yeah, I couldn't help it. Go ahead.
Yes, it just great performances all around, you know, written by Matt Damon and Ben Affleck when they were still in college. They worked on it for years. They won an Oscar for it. Just all around phenomenal movie. So many great scenes, Kayla, like when he picks up the paper, it's a meme or things I've been seeing on TikTok lately. Like, you know how easy this is for me? This is nothing. Yes. This is nothing to like the most brilliant mind in the world. Or when he's the janitor and solves the equation on the chalkboard. Like, I love those scenes.
It's not your fault. It's not your fault. I mean, it's so good. My favorite, honestly, it may be my absolute favorite movie line, but I still all the time when I got to go somewhere, it's like, I got to go see about a girl. You know, just one of the like, I don't know, swoon, so good.
So classic. The how about them apples? Like there's just so many quotable lines. You can rewatch it a million times. You pick up little things each time you watch it. Just nothing wrong with that movie. And I do love that the ending is, it's pretty open-ended. So you can make your own interpretations of what happens next. And I like that in movies if it's done well to get you to that point, where you know this character has multiple routes they go. They're going to go after the girl. Are they also going to go after the job? Are they going to live happily? You don't know, but it's believable that they could go in these different directions. I hate when movies leave it really open-ended without really having any direction towards it. And then you're like, you guys couldn't just, you know, fill up a few plot holes here? Like, what the hell? But that was not the case with Good Will Hunting. And frankly, it's probably a good thing they did not make the extended version. I'm sure you're aware of this, but the initial writing, there was a whole like multiple more scenes or arcs where after he goes to California and they're getting chased by the FBI or something, like it turns into like a chase mystery type of thing. So I'm glad they cut it off where they did.
Oh yeah, I completely agree. Like just who came out of the film to post Good Will Hunting, and I just think like is such a sweet story. And I mean, when you get to say there's several scenes of a movie that are worth like rewatching, and there's no part of the movie that you're not stopping to kind of see through. So I completely agree. Great movie choice. My first film is going to be a movie that I want to say only watch once a year, but I probably watch every 2 months. And that is Pride and Prejudice, particularly the 2005 version starring Keira Knightley and Matthew McFadden, obviously from Succession.
This had to be Mr. Darcy. List, Kayla. It just
had to be. I don't have enough opportunity to talk about this film and why it particularly is a film I watch all the time. It's my feel-good movie, obviously about the book Pride and Prejudice by Jane Austen. There's several versions of it, but the particularness of 2005 just has that kind of modern take on it. I mean, it's not like they're in New York City or anything, but it's just kind of how they're portraying the language. And Matthew McFadden is just so good as Mr. Darcy. He's just so good as this like total asshole when you see him. And I thought I tried to pathologize a lot on like why in particular is Pride and Prejudice my like romance movie, I guess, like why I'm always leaning towards it. And I think it's because I just like really like the story of this character Elizabeth Bennet, who isn't necessarily looking for love, except for like her whole entire sisters, her family is all about like getting married and all this stuff. And she's kind of the reluctant one who's like, I don't need it. And then it just happens for her, you know? And I think I just love that, like, wasn't looking for it, but it found me type of storyline. And I mean, the oldest one, we got Pride and Prejudice here. So it's a classic. I did feel called out in the film Barbie when they introduced the Depression Barbie. And then it was so much of a list of how I am as a person that I probably should be concerned that the three other people that went to this film with me all turned to look at me when Depression Barbie was described. So got to look into that. But one of them was watching Pride and Prejudice over and over. So I love it. And I'm not alone. It's a favorite amongst many people, mostly women.
Yeah, I think that's a pretty popular movie, Kayla.
Have you ever seen this film?
I've personally never seen it, no.
Would I've never you see seen this any film? Of them. Would you see this film?
Sure.
Keira Knightley.
I do love Matthew Keira McFadden. Knightley. And the thing with Keira Knightley, I love her as an actress. She needs to play a period piece. Like, yes. I don't know what it is.
Atonement.
Her look needs to be like 1800s or 1920s or something. Like, she can't play anything past like 1950. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, I totally agree. I think that might be something we table, some sort of like you watch one of the faves and I'll watch one of your faves. I think that might be interesting. So
okay,
to torture you through. Okay, what's your second film on your list?
Next on my list is Ex Machina. I've talked about this a few times on the pod. Yes, and Kayla, I got you to watch it finally, which is a good thing. So it's a 2014 Alex Garland film. It's about a young programmer is selected to participate in a groundbreaking experiment in AI by basically evaluating the AI to see if they're highly advanced as humanoids. But he's forced to do this at like the reclusive, brilliant CEO's hidden home somewhere. And the cast is Alicia Vikander, Domhnall Gleeson, and Oscar Isaac. Now, reclusive, brilliant CEO, you know me, I'm in right there. The house location, that's like my dream house spot right there. If I just had all the money in the world, I want that house. Just give it to me. And I'm a sucker. If I have all the surroundings that I can just envision myself relaxing in that location, you're automatically going up like half a star in my book. So I just was all in on this movie. It really makes you think throughout because you're learning that the AI robot played by Alicia Vikander is learning throughout the film, and you're going back and forth throughout the movie on what plan is being hatched and who has the upper hand. Is it the CEO? Is it the AI, or is it the guy reviewing the AI? Is the AI using him? Is she not? Is the CEO using both of them? Is he not? So it just, you're constantly in a state of flux where you don't know who's really running things. And the whole second half just has that high anxiety, which when you're watching it, it's like, oh my God, what's going to happen? But then the payoff happens and you're like, holy shit. Like, what a way to end that movie. I won't ruin it in case nobody's watched it here, but great movie, great ending. Can't get enough of it. It's one of my favorites.
You know, I love my Domhnall Gleeson. Remember that time, like, every movie I'd recommended had him in it?
Yeah.
I was on a real sweep. Yeah, this was a great movie. And you know what? I remember being upset at certain things that happened in the movie and being like, no, that's not what I wanted to happen. But the more, like, time I've had away from it, and even a rewatch, I'm like, no, I kind of love what it was saying. Like, it was me not wanting to accept what it was trying to say. You know what? Alex Garland makes some really, I mean, this is obviously his most popular and awarded film. He has a new film coming out this year called Civil War that I'm very excited to see. I see they did mention the film Men that came out a year or two ago, and I think that's for a certain reason. I did see the movie. I don't know if you did.
No, I've heard not great things.
Bizarre visuals, I will tell you that. And they don't happen to mention that when they talk about his movies in this one. But I'm excited for, you know, a civil war. We might be on the precipice of an actual civil war, though, so I'm not sure I'm ready to see that movie, but here we go.
Yeah, he definitely...
I love the cat behind you.
Alex Garland is definitely a director who's trying to tell a point in his films. You know, whether he does that great in all of them is another story, but you know, Ex Machina, what's happening with technology, AI, like, are we just losing ourselves in it? Is it taking us over? So it's pretty obvious, but he does it in a very smart way. It's not like it doesn't hit you over the head with it. It's done slowly, methodically, and then it kind of hits.
Yes, and the visuals are incredible. So that's a great movie choice. Absolutely. All right, so my next film, I don't even know if you've heard of this movie before, which is often the case, huh? My favorite movies. So I'm going to say Stepmom, which came out in 1998.
I've seen this movie.
You have?
I saw it with my mom probably when I was about, had to be, what, 10, 12 years old. So I vaguely remember seeing it, so I know the premise. I know the actresses involved in it, and I remember it being good, but five-star good, Kayla?
Five-star, and you know that says something, because my experience of Stepmom was I saw it at 8 years old. My sister was a baby, and I went with my mom, my sister cried because she was a baby, and so my mom left me in the theater at 8, and I watched the movie by myself. So love that for my childhood memories. God, that's so funny.
Oh, that is great.
File that away, Mom. that's why I'm the way I am. Anyways, it is a comedy drama, I'd say, for sure. And it follows a terminally ill woman dealing with her ex-husband's new lover, who will soon be their children's stepmother. That's off the Wikipedia page. It definitely, like, it has Julia Roberts in the prime of her, like, starting her, you know, rom-com run. So it's like, it's not quite the rom-com of it. In fact, a lot of it has to do with the children who absolutely hate her. And so how she deals with kind of trying to be the younger stepmom with the, you know, with their actual mom hating her. And so obviously they see they're in contention. So they kind of play
Susan
that.
Susan Sarandon, right?
Yes. And it's funny when we reviewed, what's the car movie we reviewed recently with them? Thelma and Louise. I got it. You were like, Susan Sarandon was hard to enjoy because she played such a tough, kind of hard to relate to character. And to me, that's just kind of tied to Susan, because that's kind of like a lot of the characters that she plays. And in Stepmom, it's the same thing. It's like watching a mom who's kind of suffering behind the scenes, and Julia Roberts is so charismatic and likable that you almost look at Susan like, ugh, like, get out of here. Like, why are you being such an asshole? But it's honestly just a really good movie about different family dynamics. And, you know, there's comedy in it too. Ain't No Mountain High Enough is like a favorite scene in it. And so even though it's an older movie, okay, in the 90s, I think it stands out to me as one of my favorite Julia Roberts movies. And your rewatchability kind of depends on your ability to handle sadness. But as I said, I'm a pro, so I really enjoy this movie, and I rewatch it probably once a year.
Once a year, huh? Stepmom is just on the list. Good to know.
Do you rewatch, like, how often do you think you rewatch movies, I guess? Because I just mentioned two movies I rewatch.
Yeah, that's a good question. I used to rewatch movies a lot more. I think recently I've been trying to just take in more new movies, trying to expand the amount of things I've seen, so it's been less rewatches. But like, I will go back and I could rewatch Dune 20 times in a row. Just as soon as it ends, restarts it again. So we're not talking about that on this pod, but that's an easy 5-star for me. You know, this next one I'm going to mention is one I've rewatched dozens of times as well. It's one of my favorite movies of all time, and that is The Town. Yes, The Town. What a banger of a movie, Kayla. 2010, directed by Ben Affleck. It's a heist movie, but it's more than that. You know, it's about a group of thieves that go around robbing banks in, you know, Charleston, Massachusetts. So basically Boston movie, which is what happens with Ben Affleck movies most of the time. And they take a hostage, like a manager of a bank, to start the movie. And there's some relationship with her and the leader of the crew, but they don't know. She doesn't know who he is. It is just a banger of a movie. Like, the opening scene hits you off. They have the nun mask. They're robbing a bank. Everything's meticulously planned out. You have all these side characters, like this crew. Everybody's so well developed and thought out. It's not like your typical heist movie where you have the ringleader and then you kind of have the side characters that perform their task. They actually have depth to the side characters. Jeremy Renner is a big piece in this. Ben Affleck. Blake Lively's a great add-in here. John Hamm plays the FBI guy trying to track them down. So it's just such a fun movie where it just moves. The pace is great throughout the film because there's always something that's coming up. And I am a sucker for a meticulously planned heist. Like, once they're like, all right, we're going to do this. We got to get there at 6:32. That's when they could put in the code to get to the vault. And then we need to do this. Then it's going to take 3 minutes for the cops to get there. And I just love, like, all those little meticulously planning things out so that you can see these criminals in their element and how they pull it off. And, you know, I'm not going to lie. I watched that movie and I go, this is a brilliant plan. We should get a group and just rob some shit. We figured it out. This is a playbook.
It explains why other fives for you are the later Fast and Furious movies. It makes total sense. You do love a group of criminals getting together to form a heist. I understand it now, Justin. Absolutely.
The town has developed a bit better than that Fast and Furious movies. They don't go to
your
space.
Your five is not my five.
And one thing I didn't mention earlier, but that I love, is realism in the movies. So if there is a heist, I like to have, all right, the stakes are legit here, and in this movie, they are serious. Like, it's not like, oh, they get away at the end and everything's fine, or, oh, they get captured right away and the cops are the good guys and stop them. You're rooting for the bad guys. It's like an anti-hero movie by the end of it, and it's just very well done. It's also kind of a friendship movie. You have this group that's been together for so long, living in Charleston. You have a budding relationship between Ben Affleck and the manager. It's got a lot of pieces to it, and I can rewatch this one just as much as Dune. It's so good.
You know, I do love the town. I like it probably of the more Ben Affleck directed films. So I just think it moves quickly, and the stakes are high. You know, and it's not just like, how are we getting out of this legally, but it's how we're going to get out of this, you know, personally, like, how, you know, in life, how do I want to get out of this situation? So that's a really good movie. Definitely a five for me as well. I will say The Town. My next film is going to be a 2010 film, and it is a sports drama. I do like those, you guys. The Fighter is my 5 VHS tape film. It's directed by David O. Russell. Definitely not a name and director that is big right now. Definitely controversial. But if we're taking the film as it is, stars Mark Wahlberg. And I'm going to say this, in one of his last few really good movies, Christian Bale, Amy Adams, Melissa Leo. It's about a professional boxer and his older half-brother and former boxer Dickie Eklund, played by Christian Bale, who looks like emaciated, you know, in this character who's, you know, gone through drug abuse and all types of stuff. Mark Wahlberg has been in some real shitty movies, just saying it, kind of post this, but this is a nice movie to go. You have it in you, Mark Wahlberg. You have it in you. You do not need to make Brother, Father, Stew, or whatever other Instant Family, whatever movie you have to make that you're putting out 5 movies a year. I don't understand it, but this was a phenomenal movie. It is a drama, great performances. I mean, it's a rewatchable to me. If I'm catching on TV, I'm watching all the way through.
I agree with you. Great movie. I think I have that rated as a 5-star as well. Phenomenal performances all around. Amy Adams is the girlfriend in that too, right? Who I like seeing that kind of disheveled, gritty version of Amy Adams in movies, especially from a little bit further back in the day. And just Christian Bale goes balls to the walls on every performance he does, man. He was like 48 pounds soaking wet in that movie and just crushed it.
It was so good. I mean, it was such a good movie. So I definitely think that's a 5 VHS tape for the both of us. What is your next film?
So my next one, I'm going to pivot a little bit. We've been going pretty prestige, pretty high Oscar type movies. And I'm going to the comedy side of things. I'm going with something that hit me at a time in my life that really has a deep, meaningful impact on society and how we all turn out and how to give back to our community. And that is Superbad. So it is 2007 by Greg Mottola. Classic movie. Two high school seniors are basically trying to get into a party and lose their virginity before going away to different colleges. It's a trope that's been done quite a few times. This is definitely of a time. This was 2007, and this is the type of comedy movies that were being made in that time. So don't look at this movie with a 2024 lens. I don't want to hear that shit. This was 2007, and I'm telling you, it was freaking hilarious in 2007, and it's still funny to this day. One of the most quotable movies of all time. Kayla, you're trying to cut me off. What do you want to say?
Yeah, because you know what? I'm not going to look at it with a 2024 lens. I'm going to look at it with a 2007 lens. And you can vouch for this. In 2007, when we were in high school, we watched this movie at my parents' house. And while all of you and our other friends were cackling to themselves at the humor in this movie, I was stone-faced sitting on the couch.
Because we like joy and happiness, and you like misery and sadness. That's the difference, Kayla.
You guys were rolling at so these funny jokes. That became the quotes of the entire year of high school, and I hated my life. Not one part of that movie made me laugh.
People don't forget. It was like so, 8 years ago, you know, man.
Yeah, I couldn't say one thing on that.
Oh my gosh, this is still quoted to this day, and I will say this is more of a guy's movie than a girl's movie, right? This is like me and all my guy friends love this movie. You're not a big fan. I don't even know if my wife was a big fan or if she's seen it, because her movies are all over the place and she doesn't remember half the ones she's seen because she passes out halfway through them. But it definitely helps that this came out in 2007 when I was going into senior year of high school. So it was that perfect timing of I can relate to like what's happening in this movie. Like, yeah, let's go to the parties. We're going off to college. Like, what's going on here? And, you know, I think it adds to it that it was all unknown actors at the time. So Jonah Hill, Michael Cera, it was really their first big thing. But then you also had Emma Stone making an appearance, and that was one of her earlier roles. And Seth Rogen and his buddy Evan Goldberg actually wrote the movie, and it was based loosely on their lives. So Seth Rogen has an appearance with Bill Hader as well. I just laugh my ass off every time and had to get a comedy on my list today, Kayla.
You know, I will say Michael Cera had a good year that year, because I believe Juno came out the same year. So he was kind of the guy for like a couple years. It's just kind of the awkward, lanky white guy, you know, in films, high schooler, for sure.
And now everybody hates him and thinks he's a douchebag.
You know, he did get to kind of optimize that, though, in the End of the World movie, where he just kind of like, slaps Rihanna's ass and then she slaps him across the face. So
she actually slapped him across the face because he asked if he could slap her ass. And she's like, yeah, as long as I can actually hit you back. He said, sure. And then she just whacked the shit out of him.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it was almost a slap heard around the world, except for other slaps I can think of.
I think our friends know what the true slap heard around the world is and we could bring Swarley on to discuss that at another point.
We sure can. Okay. That's I got nothing nice to say about that movie, and I believe you're supposed to not say anything. So that was a pick. All right. I'm going to go ahead and pick my next film, which is going to be the film Logan, which came out in 2017 about an aged Wolverine, of course, from X-Men, and an ill Charles Xavier who must defend a young mutant named Laura from the Reavers. I have to talk about the point in X-Men filmography that we were at when Logan came out, okay? You and I are true blue X-Men fans. We see everyone, whether it's top tier or it's absolute garbage.
And we dedicate our lives to it. Most of the time, we rewatch all the other ones, yes, before we go see the new one. It's a big effort for us, especially with the amount of films out now.
Huge effort. We love the X-Men. I personally loved X-Men. I used to read the comics. It was one of the few comics I did actually go to get and love to read. I love the cartoons. X-Men was huge for me. We were pretty dead inside at this point that Logan was coming in. At least I was.
Yeah. Yep. It was a low spot for sure.
Yeah, I was like, no, they are done. They're cooked. X-Men will not be, they just don't know how to make a good film. Terrible. Logan came out and we knew it was going to be a goodbye to Wolverine, and at least played by Hugh Jackman. And it was a dark, very violent X-Men that was just completely different from all the other versions that we had seen before, and such an interesting and, oh my God, what's going to happen next? That I remember when the movie finished, I was like, they did it. They like recovered my love of X-Men in this film. Like, this is right. This is where they're going. They're going to start making darker, intense X-Men movies. And unfortunately, it really went downhill after that. And they just went back to more garbage. But we'll always have Logan, and we'll always have 2017, Justin. We'll always have that film to be like, this is where they did it right, you know?
It came out that long ago? It was 2017. Yeah. I feel like I saw that last year. Like, I mean, I probably rewatched it, but such a great movie. They really took it in a different direction. We had our hopes brought up again for a brief amount of time. The grittiness, just seeing him go through that late stage in life, like he's breaking down, and how is he handling everything? Just one of my favorite X-Men movies of all time. And I also have that rated as a 5. We're actually agreeing a lot more than I thought on this, Kayla. Not going to lie.
There's hope for us yet. So that's awesome. Yeah. So definitely rewatch Logan if you guys need a little refresher for superhero movies. Justin, what is the last film on your list?
So the last film on my list, I'm going to go with The Social Network. So The Social Network came out in 2010, directed by David Fincher. One of my favorite directors out there, because he is so meticulous with everything. And Aaron Sorkin was the main writer on this. So Sorkin and Fincher working together just created a masterful movie. It's about the creation of Facebook and how Mark Zuckerberg, you know, quote unquote, stole the idea from the Winklevoss twins at Harvard and didn't cut them in on any of the profits. And it's him and his business partner, played by Andrew Garfield, who he also kind of eventually cuts out. And we get Justin Timberlake playing Sean Parker, the creator of Napster. And it's just so well done. You can tell the care that was put into it by Fincher and Sorkin. I love these business creation stories. This guy's in a dorm room at Harvard. He brought this up out of, you know, quote unquote, nowhere, and it turned into what it is today. And looking back, like in 2024, I think this movie is even better now, because it was made at almost the perfect time. It acts as like a time capsule of the before social media times, and just captured a moment. Now it's chaos, right? There's social media everywhere. Everybody's on it. It's not how it was back when we were in high school in 2008. You know, when we were going into college, you needed to have a college email address to get onto Facebook, because it was just starting up. It was exclusive. We were on MySpace back then. And those were the simpler times, the better times, in my opinion. But it just captured such a critical moment in history, really. When you look back, it's such a revolution in social media that's happened since then. And it's to a point now where I've heard on other podcasts, they're talking about, why don't you make a second one? What's happening in 2024? Because Meta, which is the parent company of Facebook now, is so massive. Now they're having to go in front of Congress for all of these, I mean, various scandals that have come up, and, you know, different identity situations, leaking information. It's just a mess now. And it's weird to look back on how simple it used to be back in 2008 to 2010.
Yeah, I was going to say, you know, Facebook wasn't quite being looked at with the intense lens that it is now. I mean, you know, at this time that the movie came out, it was just starting to be like, yeah, what is happening with our data again when we get all these ads that are really geared towards us? So it was a time in which we could appreciate the story of Facebook and what it was, whereas a movie, I think, coming out now would be a lot more critical about the data selling that is happening on Facebook that, you know, Mark Zuckerberg is really drowning in kind of his answers to that, like you said. So
yeah,
it was of a time we could appreciate the story of what it was. And it was a wild story. And so it was like, oh, my God, that's, you know, where what light in which do you paint, you know, Mark Zuckerberg in this story, you know?
And you can see how far we have come since that time to where we are today with social media. And frankly, I think the way Mark Zuckerberg was portrayed in this movie really impacted how people see him in real life. Because he is an asshole. He is basically the villain of this movie that he creates Facebook. It's weird because Andrew Garfield, who's amazing, we love Andrew Garfield here, is he gets shut out and he's the one you're rooting for. But Mark Zuckerberg gets all the money. He kicks everybody else out and Justin Timberlake plays the asshole Sean Parker and they kind of rise to the top. And when people see this movie, I think they immediately have that perception of what a jackass he is. And he has not been able to shake that. And he's pretty much only made it worse since then.
Oh, he absolutely has with his robotic blinking persona that he puts out that I'm pretty sure he charges himself at night. Yeah, I mean, you're kind of doomed when you have Jesse Eisenberg, who's just so good at playing this, like, I'm so much better than you personality. I'm so much smarter than you. And then you have like Andrew Garfield, you know, lawyer up asshole. And so, yeah, of course you're rooting for Andrew Garfield in this scenario. And I do want to speak a little on the trailer because I remember when this movie was coming out, I had, you know, the cable was on and I heard Creep being played by an orchestra or by a choir, Belgian choir to be specific. And it was an amazing, sinister song to be sung by like a boys choir and Creep especially. And I remember being like, this is one of the best trailers I've ever seen. And I still actually hold that to, you know, a high pedestal. It's still one of the best, most dramatic trailers that I remember to this day, where I completely can picture the trailer when it came out. So the marketing for this film was fantastic. You don't get to 5 million friends without making a few enemies. I mean, great poster line. So phenomenal.
Yeah, just absolutely banger of a movie. I now talking about it, I want to rewatch it again since it's been a few years since I've rewatched it.
The funny part is that we're going to finish this podcast and immediately watch these films again for the millionth time. So I love it for us. All right. So I kind of bounced a little bit on my fifth film, but this is definitely a five. I own the Blu-ray, so you know I mean business. And this film is going to be Brooklyn, which came out in 2015. I don't remember. Have you seen this film?
Brooklyn. It's not ringing a bell, Kayla.
2015, Saoirse Ronan, you've already mentioned Domhnall Gleeson, he is in this film, Emre Cohen, and it's basically the story of this young girl who leaves Ireland, comes to Brooklyn, is just kind of like trying to make a life for herself in America. Yep. You haven't seen it?
Yeah, I've never seen it, and I vaguely remember hearing of it, but not very much, so not even on my radar, Kayla.
Oh, wow. Okay. I think it won Best Picture. This movie is just phenomenal. It's a great story of Saoirse Ronan and her trying to figure out life in Brooklyn, but still having all these ties in Ireland. She has like a love interest that's, you know, American bred Brooklyn. And, you know, he's trying to navigate that relationship, you know, while she's torn. And it's just a really phenomenal film. It's one of my favorite romantic films. Definitely one I listed in our list.
Saoirse Ronan. I can't say her name. Saoirse Ronan's the lead in this one.
Correct,
I'm looking at it here. It looks, I'm watching the trailer on mute on my other screen here. It looks pretty interesting. I'm not going to lie. So maybe if it's on a streaming, I might watch that someday.
Yeah, I have the DVD too, so you're welcome to it. It's a really good film.
Physical media, baby.
Physical media, baby. So yeah, Brooklyn, it's a great romance, great acting, and it is a period piece, which as you all know, I love a period piece. And it just is just a phenomenal story. And I think it's incredibly rewatchable and definitely one that I do so. So I think that's a taste of our five films, five VHS ratings. And again, I'm curious to see if you listeners, any of those made your five VHS tape list. I think we should definitely do this again, Justin. What do you think?
I definitely agree. I have a lot more I can add to this list. And I think it'd be fun at some point. We do our one-star movies too, and we just bash a whole bunch of movies we don't like. But you can't have Superbad on your list because it was on my five-star
Why
list.
Why did you beat me? Why did you know what I was thinking? Because I knew exactly. Was like, okay, then I could talk about the Superbad. Oh my God, you know me so well. Yeah, I think that'd be very interesting. What is absolute garbage dumpster for us that we don't want to watch? So awesome. Okay, let's go ahead and get to our Swirly of the Week. All right, I'm going to be quick because hopefully you guys have noticed I've been getting some more clips out on our social media. And, you know, work is so difficult that it's hard to be, you know, doing social media sometimes. That's why people have managers these days. But you know what? We're in-house. And I'm like, man, I'm just going to schedule these maybe for the week. That would be great. You can't schedule stories.
So
you can't
stupid.
Do it.
So
stupid. I don't know if Instagram is in cahoots with third-party sites that want to charge you like $100 a month to be able to schedule your stories. But that's garbage. And I would think a very simple build to do in software, especially when you can schedule posts. So I have no understanding why stories isn't something that you can schedule whatsoever. Garbage. Swirly of the Week.
Yeah, that was succinct. And that was a good Swirly of the Week. My Swirly of the Week is Adam Neumann. You may know Adam Neumann from the polarizing founder of WeWork, who had a whole bunch of nonsense happening about 5 years ago or so. He got a massive golden parachute of about $2 billion to get kicked out of WeWork, and WeWork is now gone bankrupt, and he is looking to buy WeWork back, be using the money that he got from WeWork to start another company that does something very similar to WeWork. And yes, Kayla, that's the face that I was expecting. Just chaos here. This guy gets ousted because he's a lunatic and, you know, he had crazy high valuations because he was a charismatic leader and he kept getting these valuations up to, I think, $47 billion is what the final tally was. And then it tanked and they couldn't keep up with the demand. They had their financials weren't good. They tried to go public. He gets ousted, creates his another firm that does something very similar, but like has a mix of residential to it instead of just workspaces. And now that's built up enough where he's looking to buy back WeWork for pennies on the dollar. And WeWork's like, oh, we get lots of offers. We haven't seen any of his stuff come through. So WeWork just refuses to reply to him, apparently, which props to you guys. Don't let that guy take you back, even if it means you're going to just end your entire company.
You know, WeWork is not the company where we need the person who previously owned it to come back. Can we please make Twitter again? Please come back, Jack. Come back.
Come back, Jack. Yes.
Come back. We miss you. We thought there was an order, but there was.
There was. We love the old Twitter. Bring back old Twitter. Yes. It was
Bring
great.
It back.
I promise there weren't bots. It was fine.
I hate my algorithm. It's garbage. I don't know how these people are getting to my feed.
I hate it.
I
see like 12 people now. I don't see anything interesting. It stinks. I post angry stuff about – I still hashtag like film Twitter and stuff because I refuse.
Yep.
Film X, what's that mean? That sounds like I'm looking for a porno, and that's not what I'm trying to do, you know? So just chaos and WeWork. Who knows what's going to happen with them, but if you are interested in the story – we did talk a little bit about the Apple TV show a couple of years ago. We crashed with Jared Leto and Anne Hathaway, which was decent. And then I have the book, The Cult of We, that I've been dying to start, but I have to finish the three other books that I've started and not finished first, because that's what I've been doing. I've been getting about a quarter of the way through a book and then starting another one and then doing the same thing and then not finishing any of them. So
why? It scares me sometimes the ways in which we are similar. And the world should be scared as well. That's a good one. All right, let's go ahead and get to our friendship question of the week, which is, what type of genres do you think you lean on more for VHS tapes? And I guess we talked a little bit about troops, but what in particular, like, would you say action movies tend to always be a rewatch for you, I guess, when you're thinking of basic genres?
I think I'm more just a pure drama. Like, a drama that tells a good story is what I'm into the most, especially when it comes to rating it at 5 VHS tape. I may enjoy rewatching action movies more, but they're usually not done as well as, like, just a really good quality drama, you know?
You know what's funny? How can we both love the drama genre, and yet sometimes our movies are so different from each other? I think we need to go in, like, eventually we need to go into, like, the subgenre, I guess, of dramas, because they are pretty different. Like, I don't find with dramas we tend to be too much, like...
Well, you're a big period piece, like, woman-led drama lead, and as I said before, I'm kind of like, this great person comes from nothing drama. So, I guess... We should look up, I'm sure there's just like a list out there of like a million subcategories of drama, because it is like the broadest of the categories, right? Like, a lot of things fall into that. But you know, so we both like the same types of movies, but we hate each other's movies. Okay. So that makes sense, Kayla.
And that's how great podcasts were built, as they say. All right. I think that wraps it up for us this week on the pod. And as always, we'll see you next week.
Well, that's it for this episode of Wrong Opinions Only. Please follow us on Instagram at Wrong Opinions Only and on Twitter at Wrong Opinions JK, where we'll be dropping some clues and hints to upcoming episodes. Until then, JK out.